steps to the mic with a boom ping ping. Wisdom sharper than a bee's fierce sting. Words like fireflies that light the night. He turns the dark into blazing bright. Boom ping ping, the truth takes wing. Milwaukee's voice, let the city sing. Boom ping ping, hear the freedom ring. Sherwin's the king, all the airwaves king. The ground unveils the truth where lies abound. Politics, justice, social streams. He molds the chaos into dreams. No silence here, just the sound of change. Boom, ping, ping, rearrange ya. Boom, ping, ping, the truth takes wing. Milwaukee's voice, let the city sing. Boom, ping, ping, hear the freedom ring. Sherwin's the king or the airwaves king. Through the static, through the noise, he amplifies the people's voice. Boom, ping, ping, like a heartbeat's call. He's got the wisdom to break down walls. Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday, August 13th, 2026. It seems like the dust is starting to settle just a little bit, and the race for governor, the November 3rd event, is now thoroughly underway. I've been giving this a lot of thought, so I had to get over the initial shock of the unlikely, impossible and improbable victory of David Crowley. So that's in the past. Now we have to look forward to November 3rd. And when I think about it, there's something to be excited about here. So first and foremost, eating Republicans is my favorite snack. They're just my favorite thing to feast on because they give me so much nourishment. Honestly, there's just so much there. There's so much failure, there's so much hypocrisy, and there's also a lot of contrast between them and any other political party, particularly the Democrats, even in the personalities of the people that they choose. So you have a U.S. Senate race going on in Georgia. Jonathan Ossoff is up for re-election. And I don't typically follow races in other states because I am not familiar enough with the culture of those states. All you can do is you can read about the candidates and maybe you get a news article here or you see a news story there. But if you don't live in those states and you are not immersed in those political climates, it's just we're speaking out of school a lot of times. Just like I'm not a fan of somebody from Maine or New York or California commenting on the political decisions that we make here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm even more offended by people who are not familiar and from Milwaukee that have a lot to say about how we make decisions here, particularly those suburbanites that think that they know best. So I don't oftentimes involve myself in politics in which I am not immersed in that culture. But I look at who the Republicans have nominated in Georgia to run against Jonathan Ossoff. And dude is not only an election denier, but he's also, oh, yeah, the January 6th people need to get reparations. It is literally insane. And we're going to have some of that insanity here in Wisconsin. And I think it might make the pathway for a Democrat, namely David Crowley, to make his way into the governor's office. But I also want to let folks know some things that they should be aware of. This campaign is going to be very different than probably anything that you have ever seen. There's going to be some things that are going to be tried and experimented with, probably on both sides, to see what sticks, what works, what's going to go viral on social media, what message point is going to resonate with voters in the state of Wisconsin, because Wisconsin still occupies a very important place and space in American politics. And what works here very well could be what they use and the strategy that they may employ in the presidential election of 2028. So we have to be very mindful of what is happening here and paying very much attention to the issues and how those issues are promoted. There is reason to be excited, of course, for David Crowley and the possibility of this historical event. But let's not just get lost in the history. There's a hell of a lot more going on, just, you know, other than David Crowley potentially being the first African-American governor. He's from Milwaukee, and I think that may give some people a little bit of encouragement, because if you feel like the issues of this town have been ignored at higher levels of politics, then maybe this is an opportunity to showcase and to highlight the good things we have going on, where that can get more attention and more investment from state government and from state budgets, but also to provide some kind of political remedy to the problems that have long gone unaddressed in the city of Milwaukee, namely poverty, joblessness, even hopelessness, lower levels of education for our children. So maybe it's an opportunity for that. And I certainly hope so. I really do. I hope that there are Democrats that see the value of Milwaukee, that get elected to the Wisconsin State Assembly and the State Senate, because guess what? We need them too. Now, this is not just a one-man show. It's not just the governor's office. We're going to need a trifecta, especially a legislative trifecta that can even push back on some of the worst impulses of this liberal-controlled state Supreme Court, because I don't trust them. I wake up in the morning and I'm like, what did the state Supreme Court do while I was sleeping? I don't trust them. Y'all need to keep an eye on them, folks. But we are going to have to do something here in the city of Milwaukee if we want what I think could be the ultimate prize for us, electing David. And we're going to have a lot of fun with this campaign. At least I am. There's going to be so much to talk about. Tom Tiffany is just, oh, my God, he's the gift that keeps on giving. I'm just going to rip him to shreds. But I'm not going to rip him to shreds personally. I'm not going to do that, even though he probably sleeps with his mother. No, they have their own sides of the bed. They don't sleep together. I don't know. Maybe they do. Whatever. Oh, don't be shocked at who a Republican will nominate nowadays. Seriously. Because their standard is even lower than ours is sometimes for the candidates that they produce. We're going to have to let David tour the entire state and not talk about Milwaukee wherever he goes. And I think that some people may get offended by that, because during the primary election cycle, there wasn't really a lot of talk about Milwaukee and Milwaukee's issues. In fact, I thought that the candidates were trying to find a pathway to the Democratic nomination without bringing up the burden of Milwaukee. I think that's actually what they did, because if you're trying to get votes out state, which is where the majority of the votes came from, outstate voters either don't like Milwaukee, don't trust Milwaukee, or they look at the overall political leadership in Milwaukee and they think that they don't want any semblance of that political leadership representing them in their small towns and their small communities. Now, David is on a unity tour. I got some details about that I'm going to share with you in a little bit, but you're often going to hear him say, bridging this divide between urban, suburban, and rural. He has to do that to galvanize his support, because Tom Tiffany is not going to be an easy win. But we're going to have to give him a tremendous amount of grace and a tremendous amount of latitude. And I'm bringing this up because I don't want people to start to be, I guess, disenchanted and disappointed by what you're going to hear the county executive say when he does a speech in Manitowoc or in Marathon County or in Marinette, or even when he goes to Madison. He's going to be talking to people that are not us, that have different issues that need to be included in this campaign, of course. But I think some of us are going to be very disappointed that he is not platforming the issues that are most important to us in Milwaukee. That is an important part of the strategy, because if he is too Milwaukee-centric in his message, which we're going to want him to be, just like when Barack Obama was president, we wanted Barack Obama to say a whole bunch of stuff about black people and how he was going to help black people, and we wanted him to mention us all the time. He didn't. Did he accomplish things for the black community? You bet your sweet patootie he did, but it was covert. And even when Barack Obama did something to like dog whistle to the black community, it flew over most of our damn heads. One of the funding mechanisms for the Affordable Care Act. So this shows the wit of Barack Obama that flew over the heads of most Caucasian folks because, you know, not too hard to fool them. Sorry, whites. I mean, I love you, but come on. You're so blinded by your understanding of race, history, and culture that black folks, like what we know and what we understand, we can run circles around y'all and y'all wouldn't even have a clue. So one of the funding mechanisms with the Affordable Care Act is we had to increase taxes because it was really expensive to implement. Expensive to implement, expensive to roll out, expensive to sign people up, expensive to have exchanges in other states. It just was a lot. Cost a bunch of monies, okay? One of the funding mechanisms was a particular tax. Now, you got to keep in mind why Barack Obama went as far. I'm giving you an idea of how politics works. It may not be on the outside explicitly racially impactful, but implicitly it is. Barack Obama couldn't say, hey, I want a health care program in this nation because black people are dying a lot and we are the least insured and we are the least healthy and we have the least, as black people, health care clinics and investments in our black community. He can't say that because then the white folks would be like, hey, what about us? You can't say that. So you have to just give the details of what affordable health care could do for all people. But the reason why he prioritized it the way that he did, and folks still don't get this. Barack Obama been out of office for 16 years. No, not that long. 6 years? 12? What year is this? 2026? When did he leave? 10 years. Whew. That's my Brown Deer High School math. Hey, at least I'm on grade level.
Technically 9 years.
Fair enough. What is my grade level in math? What grade am I even in? Like the 41st grade? Whatever. Neither here nor there. So the reason why he went so far, I'm just giving you an idea of how implicit racial politics works, because black people have to be really versed in this stuff. Otherwise, we're going to think that nobody is talking to us. Nobody is speaking on our behalf. But because this country is so racially sensitive, and I say racially sensitive because whenever somebody says they want to do something for black people, it immediately gets shot down. So you can't say that. So if David wants to do things for black people, which I believe that he probably does, he can't say that. And because we're not going to hear him say that, we're going to think that he's ignoring us. No, my babies, we're going to be fine. Let me tell you how it works. Barack Obama laid a blueprint that we still aren't following because we still don't understand it, yet we think we can rebuild a Barack Obama coalition. No, we're not going to be able to do that. We can get close, but nothing like what we had. So the reason why he went as far as he did with the Affordable Care Act, and it cost him a lot. He expended a lot of political capital. People didn't like it. People protested against it, which was insane. In 2010, that first midterm election, there were some Democrats running for the U.S. Senate that denounced the Affordable Care Act. And guess what? They didn't get reelected. So it took a lot. It's expensive. It's politically costly, et cetera. But the reason why he went as far as he did with it is because it was the number one issue other than the economy. But if you're not healthy and you're dead, then how much money you make and what kind of job you have is kind of secondary. Let's help black people live and go to the doctor and get the medications and get the surgeries first. And then everything else comes second, because you will find as you get older, nothing is more important than your health. Literally nothing. I would rather be broke and healthy as a horse than rich and damn near dying. That's just me. So to let folks know that he was thinking about the African-American community in the Affordable Care Act, he snuck in a little tax. And that tax was the signal to us, hey, black folks, wink, wink, nod, nod, I got you. This is for you. He put a 10% tax on tanning salons. Think about that. He just picked out an industry that is universally frequented by Caucasian people. So he has this health care plan, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and he's like, you white folks is going to pay for it. One member of Congress, I cannot think of his name for the life of me. I don't believe he is still in the House of Representatives or in the U.S. Senate. he did a press release. It was like, yo, Barack Obama is the most racist president ever because he is taxing white people to go to tanning salons to pay for the Affordable Care Act. But for some reason, people didn't put two and two together, and they did not. They didn't really make the case. But that's exactly what he did. And so you have to be covert in how you assist African-Americans with our progress, because if you are outwardly racial, then you're going to lose support. David Crowley is probably going to be somewhere up north. You might see him in camouflage or blaze orange, turkey hunting somewhere near Richmond Center. You might see him in Mauston on a dairy farm milking a cow. We have to give him the grace to do that, because he's going to need to make those folks feel comfortable with him. And we have to allow him to do that. He's going to be wearing many, many hats. Some hats are not going to fit. You might see David Crowley wearing a cheesehead hat. Side note, for some reason, I don't like when black people wear cheesehead hats. That doesn't mean that you're going to stop wearing cheesehead hats. I just don't think that that's for us. So please be patient and allow this campaign to do what the campaign is going to do, because David needs to make rural and exurban and suburban white folks who maybe have never voted for a Democrat before, or maybe they never voted for an African-American before, he's going to have to make them feel comfortable. So I don't want us to think that our issues as black people in the city of Milwaukee are going to get ignored. We get our issues rectified when he makes the budget, when he does the line item vetoes. That's where we get our money, okay? We're going to have fun with this campaign. Tom Tiffany, he's not in a good position. He's endorsed by Donald Trump. Donald Trump's approval ratings are very low. Also have something that I believe is the wind at David Crowley's back. Any advantage that David could get, especially a historical one, is one that we should consider. Voters in the state of Wisconsin absolutely do not like to elect members of Congress to be governor. We don't like it. We don't like Congress people. I'm going to give you a whole bunch of examples of many members of Congress, or someone who has at least served a term or two in Congress, that has tried to run for governor and failed. So Tom Tiffany has that going against him. I'll just give you one example. I'm going to give you this example, and I'm going to take a little commercial break. How many times did Tom Barrett run for governor? Three times? Now, I ended up being the mayor of the city of Milwaukee for 20 years, but that's kind of a low bar. One of the biggest sticking points as to why Tom Barrett was never elected governor, he tried in 2002. Tom Barrett tried again in 2010. And then there was the recall of Scott Walker in 2012. And Tom Barrett was like, third time is the charm. No, it wasn't. The third time was not a charm. People did not want to bring someone from Washington, D.C. and all their poisonous, tainted politics into the beautiful, clean, honest, fair government state of Wisconsin. So we're going to talk about the things today. And, of course, if you have questions, comments, need beauty tips or recipes, our phone number is 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. We're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
The last time a person that served in Congress, either the House of Representatives or the U.S. Senate, was elected governor in the state of Wisconsin. This is also very good trivia for you. I don't know if you guys like to play trivia. I love to play trivia. I like to go deep, deep, deep into the heart of the suburbs and play trivia. I like to play bar trivia. This is a little thing that I do. And I like to show the white people how smart I am, because they get very mad when I win. Oh, no, this was like a thing that I did. I've kind of fallen off of it because I'm busy doing other stuff. But, oh, no, I would love, and I'd win the little gift card or whatever. And sometimes I'd win the gift card, wouldn't even take it.
Well, it looks like our winner is Sherwin Hughes.
Hello, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Love winning trivia.
Robert M. La Follette. You guys know him. He was the old progressive dude fighting Bob La Follette, even though the kind of progressivism that he was in favor of and that he supported and that he promoted is not, it's not this kind of progressivism that we have right now. I got an article I might share with you guys. I don't, it's kind of like super cerebral and it's real high level intellectual, but it explains why black people have a problem grasping and gravitating toward this current incarnation of democratic socialism. Because I think a lot of it is just unexplained. And when black people, quote unquote, don't get on board, then we are ostracized. We are heavily disrespected and essentially cast aside as being establishment or being some kind of slur. And the reason why so many DSA folks, I mean, like the real super loyal ones, are so demeaning and disrespectful to black leftists who do not agree with or adhere to democratic socialism because they lack complete and total historical context. And it's their ignorance that is showing, because the problem with democratic socialism, the way it is being exhibited now, and then there's MAGA too, is both of them are what we call paternalistic. You diminish the voices that disagree with you, even if they are on your own side, right? So you can have a Republican that may see the faults of MAGA, that it's too extreme, it goes too far. It's very overwhelming. It breaks the rules. And if you have a legitimate Republican that says, hey, MAGA, like maybe you should like smooth out some of these rough edges. And then what MAGA will do is they will primary that Republican. This is a personal thing for me. I am not going to be a part of any political modality that cannot accept critiques from its own side. Now, at the end of the day, I think what the Democratic Socialists want is a lot of what we want. Here's the problem. And they don't get it because they're white supremacists too. But they're white supremacists that are just a little bit more inclusive of other people, other interests, and other demographics, only because it strengthens their political coalition. Okay? You can be a white supremacist. That just means the white people take the lead. That means everybody else, no, you follow us. We're the Santa Claus. You're just in the back of the sleigh. Don't worry. We're going to take you where you need to go. So you can be very much racist and have prejudice and have racial bias, but still be inclusive of black people because we bring a political credibility. So it makes a lot of sense for a socialist movement to have African Americans in it, especially black people that are influential in the black community, because those black people who are involved in democratic socialism can then bring the black community with them without having to burden the leadership of DSA of actually talking to, working with, and understanding the black community and our history. And the reason why there was a split, because early in the 1900s, there was some combined effort of progressivism and socialism and black requests for political power. The problem with socialists is they put class first. Black people have to put race first. There is no place in this country where I can pretend I'm not black, but just be working class. I am black first. Everything else flows from that. But that's America, though. And the thing about socialism is that it says, oh, no, your problems aren't because you're black. No. It's your problems are because the rich people are hoarding all of the money and they don't pay enough taxes and capitalism is bad. I hate when they lecture us on capitalism, because no one in this nation has been harmed more by capitalism than black people. But it's not just capitalism and the exploitation of workers and labor. It's not just that. It's race, too. But they don't want to hear that because they are just as paternalistic as MAGA is. And therefore, black folks will have no part of it. That can be a much longer discussion, but I know that it's going to come up again, because I think with Francesca Hong's historic run, and it was historic, some credibility has now been shifted to Democratic Socialists. And they're going to raise a bunch of money. I'm sure she's raised a bunch of money for Democratic socialist here, and every time she did a national interview, she probably helped to elevate and pedestalize the profile. But they're going to keep coming. They're going to keep coming. They're going to keep running. We got a couple of them now. I got a couple in the state legislature. You have an alder person or two that are also Democratic socialists. So they're going to keep coming. But there's still going to be a disconnect between black leftists, black Democrats, and DSA. And there's like a conflict there that is rooted in their lack of racial understanding. All right. There have been people that have served in the House of Representatives that were elected governor of the state of Wisconsin. You may know some of these people. I'm going to read their names just as an example, but it's also extremely rare. All right. Cadwalader, that's his first name. Cadwalader. How do you even say that name? Cadwalader C. Washburn, Republican, served in the House of Representatives from 1855 to 1861, and again from 1867 to 1871, was elected governor for 2 years in 1872, right? What other member of Congress? You know, Tom Tiffany is a member of Congress. I'm just giving you some examples that, yes, it is possible for a member of Congress to be elected governor, but it's very, very rare, and it was a long time ago. Jeremiah M. Rusk. There's a county named after him, if I'm not mistaken. I think we have a Rusk County in Wisconsin. Also a Republican. Served in the House of Representatives from 1871 to 1877. Then was elected governor and served from 1882 to 1889. And then, of course, Fighting Bob La Follette, Republican again, served in the House from 1885 to 1891. Then was elected governor and served from 1901 to 1906 before being elected to the U.S. Senate. Other members of Congress, at least a dozen of them, mostly members of the House of Representatives, have run for governor of Wisconsin. No U.S. senator from Wisconsin has ever done so in the modern political era after 1913. So let's see here. John Tweedy ran for governor. He was a member of Congress. He didn't win. Oh, you guys know this one. Gilbert Woodward. He was a member of Congress, ran for governor, lost. Joseph Beck lost in a Republican primary. He was a member of Congress, ran for governor, lost. Raymond Cannon. Nope. Even Bob Caston was a sitting House member, lost the 1978 Republican primary. And then you got Tom Barrett. Lost a Democratic primary in 2002 and lost general elections in 2010 and 2012. Mark Green was a member of the House of Representatives. He lost to Jim Doyle in 2006. Then another Republican, Mark Newman, former member of the House of Representatives, lost in the 2010 Republican primary to Scott Walker, who was county executive when he ran for governor and won. There is more history showing that Wisconsin would rather elect a county executive to governor than a member of Congress. And then now you have the next in line of succession of failed members of Congress running for governor. Tom Tiffany, currently a member of the House of Representatives and is the Republican nominee for governor. I said all that to say this. Looks like the odds are starting to stack up in David's favor. Donald Trump's approval rating is low. Tom Tiffany is an election denier. He is heavily MAGA. Do you know that even on days where Tom Tiffany was conflicted with Donald Trump on a piece of legislation where there needed to be a House vote, and if Tom Tiffany didn't agree with a piece of legislation that Donald Trump wanted the MAGA caucus to support, you know what Tom Tiffany would do? He wouldn't even go to Congress that day. Isn't that crazy? Instead of voting his conscience or even voting on behalf of his constituents, if there was a piece of legislation that Donald Trump liked and Tom Tiffany didn't, he wouldn't even vote at all, so he wouldn't be on the record as voting against his boss. That's insane to me. Don't let that man become governor. David Crowley, she's got to do it now. Damn it. The primary is over. Shout out to all the people that were involved. And thank you to Kelda for taking just enough votes away from Franny Pants. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. We'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Aaron says, most black folks, 50% on the dollar in 1 year with politics and the market. What is, I don't know what that means. Linda says, you can set the stage for us to follow, Sherwin. Give us some ideas, strategies to help make this moment happen, the best of black Milwaukee. I'm not entirely sure what black people want. Like, we obviously want more opportunities and we want, I don't know, more money and better jobs. But you, let's say you bring real good jobs here, whatever a good job is. I don't even know what a good job is. What's a good job? Being a welder? No, no, we don't want to weld. And plus, I don't know if I trust some black folks around fire. But if you're not qualified for the job, what's the point of bringing a good job here? So I'm trying to think, because I hear this a lot. Oh, Sherwin, we got to do stuff for black Milwaukee. Black Milwaukee is unique and different and very individual, and people are at different levels and want different things and have different aspirations and different desires. If it's the lowest level of us, what do we do to help them? We got to make sure that education here is solidified, because that is where they are lacking the most and have and could potentially have the most benefit. For black people who might be, you know, fairly educated and a little bit more ambitious, maybe the barriers to entrepreneurship should be lowered. We know that African Americans usually have less resources, less available credit. Maybe there can be some opportunities there. But there has to be like a multi-step approach to how you improve overall black Milwaukee. First and foremost, we need political education, because you can have an agenda and want a bunch of things. You can want better schools and you can want more opportunities and more entrepreneurship, you know, grants and resources. But if you don't know how the political system works and where you need to get in to fit in, what committee meetings you need to go to, and every now and again to help the black community, you may actually have to go to Madison, to the seat of state government, and provide your testimony. Go to a committee meeting. Speak in favor of a particular bill or a proposal that might do exactly what we're talking about. Free up more resources for black entrepreneurs, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to be very much involved in this campaign, because there's a real opportunity here, not just stopping a MAGA acolyte, but to put who I think is a reasonable person in the governor's office. And also shout out to Tony Evers, because I don't know if most people are grasping this. Power in this country is really only transferred in a couple of ways, right? First is revolution. Next is through democratic means, just through the regular, ordinary vote, or it can be bestowed. Tony Evers bestowed power to David Crowley with his endorsement and with his support. You got to think about this for a second. Because first of all, Tony Evers absolutely didn't have to do it, and he was expected not to. He made a very conscious decision, okay? So he bestows this power, which we have to say, it worked. It worked just enough. It 3,200 votes worth. It worked. And for Tony Evers to pick David Crowley of the other individuals he could have bestowed that power on. Remember, Tony Evers passed up Mandela Barnes, who served with him as lieutenant governor. Tony Evers didn't bestow power on his current lieutenant governor, Sarah Rodriguez. Probably a good thing that he didn't do that, because that would have been a disaster for everybody. Tony Evers didn't bestow power on what essentially was his number two in state government, Joel Brennan, who ran his Department of Administration. He bestowed power to David Crowley. And here's one thing that I know about the white folk. Even the good white folk do not want to bestow power to black people. The good white folks will say, okay, black people, if you can get elected, then go ahead, then the power is legitimate. If you can get elected, if you can convince enough of us to vote for you, then we won't stand in your way. But for them to bestow it, like, that's a historical moment. I don't want that to be lost. But I have a feeling the moment will be lost as soon as we get done talking to. Hi, Bob. How are you today?
Hey, Sherwin. Well, you're deep in the politics. You know a lot about it. I grant you that. But you said one thing today. You said good health and no money is like is not as good as bad health and being rich, or is better. Now I have another analogy. Oh, see that? Well, I'm getting old. I can't say them words no more. A point, another point, I say. The second to what you say, it's me being able to wrestle, work hard, one job and three part-time jobs, one full-time, just athletic, and now I can't walk. I'm old, and I got one arm. The thing that goes second to that, I got a happy-go-lucky attitude. Otherwise, I wouldn't have played my second trip place for three times. You know, that's interesting. I don't let it get me down. I'm not, woe is me, woe is me. God give me a happy-go-lucky attitude. Now, David Crowley, I'm a little bit lighter than him, maybe. White people like light people. That's who they tell that butt up. No, white people like light-skinned people. So I'm a little worried about my man. I'm a little lighter than him, not much.
So are you saying that you should be the Democratic nominee because your skin complexion is lighter than David Crowley? Bob, I'm not even going to entertain. This is probably one of the dumbest things that you've ever said. Let me make it abundantly clear. White people like other white people. They don't. We as black people have colorism. White people don't care. If you got a tinge of black in you, they put us all in the same bucket. So don't use your very limited knowledge and logic and try to apply to white people that you've never met before. Okay? Don't do that. Let's not do colorism is bad. We don't like that.
White people like light-skinned people more, not all of them, but most of them, because they got a lot more white in them. Good God. And that's what I'm worried about. He's dark.
Bob,
you know?
So hard to listen to. You're embarrassing yourself right now because you're speaking on behalf of a group of people that historically just don't like black people at all. You ever heard of the 1/8 rule? You ever heard of that? The one drop rule? You ever heard of that?
No, what is that,
Phil?
What is that? You know? But,
Bob, you've never heard of the one drop rule?
One drop rule? One drop rule.
If you have one drop of black blood in your body, regardless of your complexion, you are considered black. I think it's like 1/16. So if you have like a biracial great-grandparent, you would be considered black and kept out of society. You would be separated. You would be segregated. So if you think that the color of our skin has anything to do with white people accepting us, I beg to differ, because they actually had established rules to determine who was black and who was not. Who was white? Do you think that light-skinned black people could vote? Do you think the light-skinned black people that had really good hair and even light-complected eyes had the same opportunities as white folks in the Jim Crow South? That's a yes or no?
Through my experience.
Which is very limited.
White people.
But I asked you a yes or no question. We're going to do the yes or no before we go on anything
else.
You were biracial even, were you considered, because your skin tone was light, even if your hair was straight and your eyes were blue, did you have the same opportunities as white people? Yes or no?
Wow.
Yes. No, not wow. Yes or no?
Yeah, I guess.
God almighty. Yes or no?
I would have the same opportunity.
Yes, Bob, yes, you know? Yes or no? Yes or no? I'm trying not to throw stuff in the studio. Yes or no?
Okay.
So you mean to tell me that in, let's say, 1901, a person that was biracial, they had a black father and a white mother, they were looked at the same as a white person, they could vote, they could own property, they could run for office, they could go to a bank and get a loan? Is that what you're telling me? That if you were biracial?
No, not not when I came up, too much. I mean, it happened, but.
So then I'm putting a hole in your colorism argument that white people, quote unquote, like black people that are lighter. That's not the case.
Okay. They've got better jobs. They've got, put up in higher places than dark-skinned people, you know? I mean, you know, I'm about the same color as my man, and, you know, I just worried about the white folks in Wisconsin looking at him.
Has a white person ever told you that?
No, but I've seen it. You know, I just seen them white people give more to, because they got more white in them.
All right.
They just do.
Well, Mandela Barnes was, his complexion was lighter than David Crowley's, and David Crowley outperformed him, right? You'd think that if your theory is true, that the lighter black would do much better. Mandela didn't really do so good. In fact, he dropped out of the race. I just am trying to prove that your argument of colorism is terrible. And that's usually a beef that, because black people, we tend to be jealous of lighter skinned black people because we believe they are closer to whiteness. And then we look at all the opportunities they get and we just assume because their complexion is lighter than ours that they got the opportunity because they are lighter. Maybe they're smarter. Maybe they were better educated. Maybe they had better professional networks. That is us as black people that are of a darker skin color platforming white supremacy. When we internally as black people think that light-skinned blacks have it better, have it easier because they're closer to whiteness, that's a us problem, not a white people problem. Because white people tell you, oh, no, we hate all you niggers. No, it doesn't matter what your hair texture is or your eye color. So that's something that I think you need to know, Bob. I'm a little disappointed that you made it to your ripe old age and didn't realize that. Colorism is a black thing.
You keep in your political arena, you know, you're 14, man. You're doing good in this. This is a big thing. That's been your great experience. Continue, sir. And I'll talk to you later. I used to like Chaka Khan, but Beyonce is number one now. I'll talk to you later. Biden, tow that butt up.
I hate when I gotta explain common sense stuff to black people. I hate it. Because why do I come here?
For what, Bob?
Listen, I need Bob to be arrested. I think he just needs to spend a little time in a joint. Just not a long bid. Just like 9 months.
That's a long time.
He needs it. I'm gonna take a break, come back. Really don't want to talk about colorism because it's embarrassing and it's an old, antiquated 20th century concept that we as black people need to do away with. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. I'll be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
You all are going to have to get involved at a level that you probably have never gotten involved before. What frustrates me is the people that have the most complaints, you know, about unfairness, a lack of opportunity, how bad the conditions are, and they do the least about it. Posting on social media your support for a candidate or a cause means nothing. It means as much as a yard sign. Little update for you. My across-the-street neighbor is still displaying their Francesca Hong yard sign. So just saying. She had yard signs everywhere. They're all over the city. Blanketed whole neighborhoods. You would think that, oh, my goodness, her support is overwhelming. Yard signs don't vote, do they? So if we are serious about this endeavor, we have to get off the sidelines. And it makes me curious why we would be on the sidelines anyway, because where this Trump administration is and how it is now trickling down into states and locally, that should be a wake-up call for us. There's a real opportunity here, and I don't want us to squander it. I entertained a telephone call last night on the Hughes Views 414 YouTube podcast where I found myself having to convince a 50-year-old black man why he needs to vote. I am no longer going to do that. And if you're one of those people that, oh, well, Sherwin, then tell me why I need to vote. I'm not telling you a goddamn thing. Screw you. Don't vote. In fact, you're probably better off not voting. I'll vote, and then the political party or the apparatus that I and those like me select get to tell you what to do. I am not here to tell a black person that they need to vote because they always want to be convinced. It's real a weird kind of power trip, because I think that we have an understanding of how important the black vote is. It's almost like this fulcrum between white people that are on the far right and even white people that are on the far left. Like, black people are like the balance in between, right? And that's a tremendous amount of power, especially in a state where 25 to 30,000 votes will decide who wins a statewide contest. Yes, I expect the margin to be exactly like that. Please keep this in mind. The theme of our elections are usually going to be very, very close. It's going to be maintained for the foreseeable future. In the event that David Crowley gets elected governor, it's not going to be a landslide. In the event that Tom Tiffany gets elected governor, that won't be a landslide either. And then what's going to happen is if we see those votes are less than 30,000 or less than 25,000, we are going to wonder, could we have done more? Should we have engaged more? Should we have been much more active and involved? And I'm telling you right now on the front end, absolutely, because you don't want to wake up on that Wednesday when Tom Tiffany is giving his speeches. You ain't going to want that. We do have time on our side. We've got about 83 days, give or take. Now, that's not an unlimited amount of time, but it's enough time to actually make some progress here. You're going to have to go and talk to your neighbors. You're going to have to. You're going to have to engage some of your family members. You're going to have to. You're going to have to make sure that those that are closest to you and those that you have impact and influence over are ready to vote and that they know how to vote. You're going to have to go to myvote.wi.gov and get a sample of your ballot and read that referendum and read it again and read it to somebody else. And if they don't understand it, read it to them again. We're going to have to do these things because now it is time out for black people to need and to want all of these things. We want all of this social change, and we'll put in no effort. In what world? Republican-controlled, Democrat-controlled, capitalist or socialist, can you achieve without hard work? Please show me that. What planet is that? Because I want to go there. Where can you get and accomplish and be successful without putting in work? I mean real work. I think that we have distanced ourselves from work, and I think part of a reflection of why some of us are in the situation we're in, we don't want to work for it. You got to work hard. You got to do stuff that you don't want to do so that you can do the stuff that you do want to do. You got to have the crappy job. You got to deal with the boss that makes you sick so you know that you want to do and achieve and be better than that. You got to make minimum wage for a while to realize you don't want to make minimum wage anymore. You have to work hard, and we all are going to have to work hard to make this thing come to fruition on November 3rd. Now, I'm going to let you think about that. I'm going to take a little break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the stuff. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be back for hour two.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.